My life. My life.
My life.
Amazing.
My life.
My life.
With
amazing.
My life.
Amazing strangers.
Hello to you, wherever you are in the world today, and welcome to My Life with Amazing Strangers. As that title suggests, I meet with people from all walks of life. We may have met only once, maybe twice, perhaps never at all. Sometimes we've been introduced by people we know, sometimes we've met on social media. However, we've got two things in common, and that's the care and the welfare of human beings. My name is Gary Robinson. Once upon a time, I was a full-time broadcaster for a living. Now, in my mid-50s, I'm exceptionally proud to be an outreach carer. And for the record, I'm exceptionally proud to be in my mid-50s too. So the three C's, connection, compassion and care, are high up on my list of daily priorities. However, as you've probably guessed, it's impossible to shelve the broadcaster in me, hence these podcasts, these audio actualities, where people tell me, and more importantly, you, their unique and very special stories. So this is episode 3, and most fittingly, my three guests, my amazing strangers, are Isabella, John and Naomi, who are campaigners with the charity Changing Faces, who support people with a visible difference. Now get this, nearly one in five people across the UK self-identify as having a visible difference, such as a mark, a scar or a condition. At least 1.3 million children, young people and adults are estimated to have significant disfigurements. 6 in 10 have experienced hostile behaviour from strangers. Over a third of people say they've been discriminated against in job applications because of their appearance. And almost half of young people surveyed said they've experienced bullying about their appearance at school. So in this edition, we'll find out more about the experiences of Isabella, John and Naomi, who'll share their own unique, powerful stories. And we'll explain why, as campaigners for Changing Faces, that while the charity and their work is having an impact on UK society, there is still much more to do. My life with amazing strangers, John, Naomi, and we start with Isabella from Changing Faces.
Yeah, I mean, my story started off when I was about 9 years old. I started developing very severe cystic acne, and then I tried lots of different antibiotics and medications and really got very in-depth into a lot of mental difficulties around acne and everything that's gone on with that, you know, stares in the street, horrible comments from adults that I found, mainly more than children. This is always a thing that surprises people, is that I was never bullied at school, but I would had countless comments from adults who were either strangers or people in my life, always about my skin. And it got to a point when I was about 19 years old where there was not one area of my face that wasn't covered in a very large bump or cyst. I've got a condition called polycystic ovaries, which means that I'm always going to have acne and it will come and go. So as I know, we're doing a podcast, but if we show any visuals, my skin is fairly clear for what my skin is like normally at the moment. But then I have got a lot of scarring and a lot of pigmentation and things that have to go alongside that.
I'm interested, and I'm sure that many, you know, media outlets and broadcasters are interested in that point about the adults. And without sensationalizing, you know, what's going on, what can you give us an example of what sort of reaction, what sort of comments were made to you? Because I for one find it difficult. I'm sure that some people who are watching this tonight find it difficult. I wouldn't dream of saying anything to anybody about anything personal, but what sort of things would be said?
I mean, it's completely horrific, especially now I'm 24. So I think of what people were saying to me when I was about 10 years old, 13 years old, is they'd be calling me gross, they'd be calling me unclean, saying it was dirty, just because I had some spots, essentially, you know. And it's these horrible messages we put onto kids and put onto young children, that these beauty standards where you're supposed to be unfiltered and have these perfect porcelain faces, which are completely not real. You know, as you say, one in five of us have got visible difference.
And Naomi, what about you? I've got some more in-depth questions coming to each and every one of you, but I'm just very keen to get your background. So Naomi, tell us your story, if you wouldn't mind.
So I'm in Worcester, so kind of Midlands.
Hello, Worcester.
And I have ptosis of the eyelid, so a lazy eye, but I do love how two of my favourite comedians also have a lazy eye. Ramesh Ranganathan and Russell Howard. So naming dropping.
Yeah.
And I was born with my finger bent and now it's been straightened by surgery, but it's still a bit of a very tight hand that probably does need a second surgery, but I'm like, when do I do it? But yeah, I struggled with my hand and writing and stuff like that throughout school. I'm constantly waiting for surgeries and delays and stuff that didn't help. And I've also had a problem with acne because I was 17 and nothing was happening. So I took tablets to get everything happening, and then sudden acne was really bad, and it's left quite a lot of scarring on my cheeks. And I still get loads of spots. You can see them on this, on my chin. And I find children are curious. They'll ask those questions of what's wrong with your eye, and to be easy to them, instead of I've got ptosis of the eyelid, instead of saying that, I just say I've got a lazy eye, and then quickly distract them, because they're just wanting to know what's going on, why are you different, and just I actually much welcoming them to ask those questions, because I'd rather them ask me than when they're grown up and adults speaking about me behind my back, and it's just like, why would you do that? Just ask me. I'm happy to answer questions.
And you work with children. Your career is working with children. And do you find that the children you work with are quite inquisitive, as you said, and ask you know, honest, open questions, really?
Definitely. But also, if I notice any children with visual difference, I mentioned Changing Faces, being a volunteer campaigner. I mentioned the lovely charity I work with and mention it to their families.
Well, you've been with Changing Faces, what, since 2010?
Yeah.
Do you know, I took a deep breath there because I thought, oh, maybe I've aged you by saying that. I thought, I hope I've got the year right, but it was 2010.
Yeah, 2010. Well, actually, I had a first session with them in 2006 when I was in year 8 of secondary school. We did a secondary school starter club thing, and I made a lovely positive capsule box that I still have nowadays, and I still look at the lovely thoughts that people made. In 2010, I joined Changing Faces Young People's Council, and I loved doing that.
John, as I asked Naomi and Isabella, would you mind sharing your story for us today, please?
Yeah, well, I acquired my visible difference back in February 2022. So I've been living with it now for, you know, just over a year. So I'm sort of very new to, you know, living with a visible difference. And I developed a small sty on my lower right eyelid in December 2021. Within 6 weeks, it had grown to the size of a cherry, and it became obvious that something was not right. And so after various tests, various visits to various hospitals, it was by absolute chance that I had the opportunity to speak to an oculoplastic surgeon who just had a feeling that something wasn't right. And he'd remembered something that he'd read about in a medical journal 35 years ago when he was studying, and he'd asked questions about it to his professor at the time, and his professor had said, don't worry about that, you'll never see a case of it in your career, it's that rare. And he sort of met me and he just said, I've got a feeling, so I'm going to send you for an MRI. And so I was diagnosed with squamous cell carcinoma, which is a fairly common type of skin cancer, but unfortunately it had done a lot of damage to the muscles around my eyes. I now have a piece of skin that's been taken from my belly, which now covers my eye socket. So it's been a really big adjustment, going from sort of someone who was, I would say, fairly image conscious anyway, to suddenly sort of going through the challenges of the stares, the second glances, having people come up to you. You know, I have the experience of perfect strangers. You can be in the supermarket buying eggs and milk, and a stranger will say, what happened to your eye? You know, or what's wrong with your eye? And, you know, you just want to go about your daily business. So that's, for me, that's been a massive adjustment. But I've you know, been supported by great family and friends. So, you know, coming out of the other side of it now, but it has been a really big adjustment for that first year.
Why do you think some people are that inquisitive or that forward? Have you got any thoughts around that? I can't quite fathom it, but why are people so forward and so inquisitive and just so blatant in their questioning? I just wonder I don't get it.
I'm not sure I have an answer for that. I'm sorry, my dog has just woken up and decided to join the conversation here. I'm not sure I have an answer to that. But what I can tell you is that I think the way I look at it is that it generally comes from a place of good intentions. You know, most people will probably ask because, you know, maybe they want to show some kind of empathy towards, you know, what's happened. It's difficult to say. I always try to remember it comes from a place of good intentions, because that means that the way I react is usually more favourable than sort of being offended by it. I don't know, you know, maybe Isabella and Naomi can maybe answer that better than I, you know, that I can, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Isabella, Naomi, and we'll keep it brief. But Isabella, have you got any thoughts on why people are so out there, open, blatant?
I think there's a real combination of factors of people being curious. But for me personally as well, I found that I've got a lot of trolling online. And I think that a lot of that comes from jealousy, almost, in a sense of one of my very good friends said this to me the first time that I got trolled, and I was quite upset. It was a really, really horrible comment. And she said, what you need to think about is that they see you being happy and you don't look normal. You don't fit the stereotype of what beautiful or perfect is, but they see you being happy and living your life and enjoying it. And they're thinking, gosh, I really don't like my life. How can they be happy in what they have? And it's that sometimes where that reaction comes from. And actually, the more I've had horrible encounters and trolls and things like that, I do think some of it does come from that.
And you're doing a lot on Instagram, aren't you, Isabella? You do a lot of campaigning, a lot of awareness on Instagram.
Yes, I do. Yeah, I'm a content creator, so one of those influencers, but hopefully on the nicer side, where it's trying to spell of these beauty standards, really, and shout a big thing for changing faces.
Brilliant. And long may it continue. I read that it's your account is a safe haven. I love that quote. I saw that your account is a safe. And we'll talk about unsolicited advice in just a second, because I know you do get that as well from people who aren't, you know, particularly expert in the subject. But Naomi, what about you? And then we'll move on from the subject. But Naomi, once again, why do you think people are so curious and so open when they ask questions?
I think as children, we're taught to be curious, and how the society's always changing. Like, the statistics are always changing with us, with visual differences. And I think some people just don't realise that they need to put a bit of a filter on themselves, that they need to say it in a better way, or just in a nicer way, not as in, oh, why have you got a lazy eye, mate? It's kind of like, they need to say it, oh, what happened to your eye? So like that, they need to be able to think before they speak. I think a lot of adults struggle with that concept.
Yes, absolutely. And I can be guilty of that myself. So I think we can all fall into that category from time to time. John, you know, we were talking, I want to talk about family, because I'm interested to find out whether your family's attitude towards you in a caring sense changed when you'd been through this trauma, as it were. Did they become overly caring? Were they overly empathetic to making sure that everything was okay? How did your family react to what was going on?
It's interesting, because for me, as acquiring the visible difference, I went through cancer treatment as well. So I had sort of 6 weeks of radiotherapy, which, you know, for anyone who's gone through that, it just devastates your body. You're just so exhausted. For me, what I found was my family were really over empathetic, particularly while I was going through the cancer treatment. And one thing that I found is, particularly with cancer treatment, once that finishes, you know, people kind of go back to normal, including friends and family as well. They go back to normal. And, you know, because you're starting to get back to normal at that point. And I think for me, where there was probably the biggest sort of issue was my family and sort of close friends initially understanding that actually it's not over at that point, because now I have this other thing to deal with, which is, of course, the visible difference. And so I think it took them a little while to get used to it, you know. And I think I had a mixture of people who were of family members who were maybe overprotective when we were out, and they'd say, oh, why is he staring at you? You know, they would get a little bit protective, to others who maybe couldn't understand the fact that you're more self-conscious because you're seeing the staring. And I've had conversations with a close friend in particular who sort of said to me, are you being oversensitive? Are you looking for it now? And, you know, so we had those initial chats. And I think what worked in my case was just having an open conversation with them and just sort of saying, look, this is how it is. You know, the second glances and the stares happen every day. You get used to it. You know, when you're in my company, don't worry about it. I'll deal with it, you know. And it's having that open conversation, I think, that kind of helped. But it's true. There certainly was a big adjustment for them in sort of realizing that I had this visible difference that now had sort of changed things. And in fact, I think it's worth me saying that I didn't really realize that I had a visible difference until much further down the line. I had my initial surgery in February, treatment in March, April, May for the cancer. And it wasn't really until this time last year, so June, July, when I then started to become aware of the fact that I have a visible difference. I hadn't heard of the term visible difference until I eventually found changing faces. So sort of once you then apply that terminology to it, then it all starts to make sense, and you start to, or certainly I started to realize, you know, what I had and then what I needed to do to be able to get used to everything that comes with it.
Isabella, how important is language in education around visible difference? And I'm asking that in particular, Isabella, because you're on social media, you're an influencer, and so how important is getting the message across about how we use language, terminology, and so on and so forth when we go through the education process?
I think it's so important. I really think it should be even taught in schools to that extent. I really do, because particularly, even as John said, I would never have said that I had a visible difference, ever. I just thought it was just something that I was dealing with on my own. And it was only when Changing Faces said to me, oh no, even things like acne, that is also a visible difference. And I think that we all think we're very alone, we feel very isolated when you have a visible difference. And once you have a term, like saying you have a visible difference, you get to meet all the wonderful people like I have here, you know, the wonderful John and I and me and everybody else at Changing Faces. You become part of a community. You stop feeling alone. But yeah. Then also, particularly that I see on social media, you've got a lot of branding. So I get sent even products that will say, this will clear your bad skin in 2 days. And you think, well, for me, acne is something I have to live with for the rest of my life. It's not nice to continuously hear that you have bad skin or any sort of horrible connotation that you've got with that. So Changing Faces got a really great glossary, actually, with journalists as well that can use. They've just things to say and ways to be nice. But I do think sometimes it's quite simple if you just be kind. Think, would I like to hear this about my face? If I probably wouldn't, then maybe you shouldn't say it.
Naomi, media, interestingly, has a very large part to play in the message, all sorts of different platforms. I'd love to get your view, Naomi, around representation. So let's take TV, let's take drama, soap operas, that world. Until I started doing the research for this interview, it did dawn on me that people with a visible difference are grossly underrepresented in this area. What are your thoughts?
Definitely, but I am finding there are some inklings of, especially in some kids shows, I've heard of a couple of kids shows that are bringing on people with visual differences and making it a normality, kind of, because it is normality for normal life. And I think a lot of soap operas and other things need to start doing that. And we need to stop being the villain with visual difference. We need to stop being the villain. And I love how Changing Faces do this hashtag pledge to be seen with different organisations and actually working with them to make sure they're using the correct language and not like, as Isabella was saying, like bad skin, like making sure that we're using the right terminology. Because, I mean, years and years ago, when probably people with different disabilities and visual differences were using like circuses and we were called different names, and terminology has come on better, but it needs to be a lot more better. And it really does start with the kids, because I find once the kids know, then it will keep growing up.
Naomi, that something you just said there has hit me right between the eyes, and it was the quote about the villain. Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, absolutely.
I hate James Bond. I really do. Because we're constantly, visual difference is constantly the baddie in James Bond, and I'm sick of it, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I love how Ramesh Ranganathan is starting to be a judge on his own programme. And I think we need a lot more main parts.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am loving this conversation. I am absolutely. I've got so much I really want to get through, but I know at some point we're going to run out of time, and you guys are going to have something to eat and drink, which would help. So we've talked about language, we've talked about education, we've touched a little bit on representation. And how has working and being supported by Changing Faces helped you and built your resilience? And it's a question to each and every one of you, really. So John, because obviously, you know, there are some people with a visual difference that may never have heard of Changing Faces, although they've been around for 30 plus years. How have they helped you, and how have they built your resilience, your confidence, and helped you through what you've been through?
Well, I think what Isabella was saying before about finding your community, that really takes away the isolation. And so for me, when I found Changing Faces, I approached them initially through sharing my story, basically. I sort of read through the stories on their website, and I very clearly remember for the first week that I found them, I had pretty much their website open on my browser all the time, and I was reading through the stories and found some stories similar to mine. And, you know, so I contacted them and said, well, I'd like to share my story. And that was the first kind of move that I made. And what happened for me was, in sharing my story, once they put it out on social media, I was sort of watching and reading the comments and just the support that came in from those comments. And of course, Changing Faces, you know, particularly their social media, it is a very sort of safe place, you know, and so I felt like I was in the right place. The comments that came from the people that were following those social media accounts was just amazing. And what that actually did for me was it gave me the confidence to eventually step out of the house or my houseboat without an eye patch, because at the time I was wearing an eye patch and I was covering this up. I sort of remember it took a few weeks, I think, after sharing my story, but I just felt like I had the self-confidence to be able to do it as a result of seeing the support from that community. So I remember stepping out without the eye patch on, and then I did that once, twice, and then did it again, and eventually within a couple of weeks sort of ditched the eye patch, and I don't wear an eye patch at all now. So that's kind of what it helped for me. They do have some great sort of support services there as well, for people to talk to, you know, if you need that little extra support. But I think for me, what I personally found most effective was sharing the story, coming on board as a campaigner, and in some ways that's almost been a form of therapy, you know, in itself for me, you know, because the more you talk about it, the more that you're trying to sort of spread the message and raise awareness, you get feedback from that community, and you know, and that's what's kind of helped me in my case, definitely.
And Naomi, 2006, 2010 to this day, obviously, I've got to stop saying that, haven't I? I've got to stop reminding you of that. But you obviously love it. You know, you're a campaigner. You know your stuff inside out. So apart from all that, you know, why do you love changing faces so much?
Well, they have helped me so much, especially when I was in the Young People's Council, we talked about a way of, they ask a question, I explain it in a way they understand for their age, and then distract them from whatever comes next. And they taught me how to do that. For children, I just say I've got a lazy eye and then go on to the next thing that they're doing. And it's answered that question and given them something new to think about.
So there's clearly very practical and emotional support from the charity.
Yeah, definitely. And yes. I also, after I had spot treatment, Change Your Faces do a thing called skin camouflage, where they do makeup, which is, it's prescription prices, so it's not expensive, and they get to look at your skin tone and match your skin and give you makeup, which can be a lot of money.
Absolutely.
And I actually don't wear makeup very often, only for like smart events. I try not to put makeup on. And just, I do hate when with the NHS wearing the mask all day and just the amount of sweat and spotty I was then. But I feel like it's getting better now. Absolutely. I don't have to wear a mask at all.
Brilliant. And Isabella, you know, let's stay with the charity. You know, why are you so? I suppose you are very grateful to Changing Faces, but why are you a champion, as it were, for them?
I think Changing Faces is doing something that nobody else is doing completely. If you look at other charities, even, no one's actually taking a stand to say, this is what's going on at the moment. This is what's not right. Here's some resources to help you fix this. And I think that that's such a unique position to be in. The amount, the community that it has behind it, the opportunities that it has, you know, even speaking to you today, that it's all through that as well. And I think it is completely, as Amy and John have said so well, it's that they have that emotional and the every single level of support that you could want comes from Changing Faces. And I've even got a family member who I had no idea knew who Changing Faces were, told them what I was doing. They even get involved with the Skin Camouflage Service. So it's got such a wide-reaching support network of people of all ages. It's just incredible. It really is.
My life. Amazing. My life.
My life. So that was My Life with three amazing strangers, Isabella, John and Naomi.
Amazing strangers.
In the next episode, I'll be joined by Starkeeper Morton, who's the keeper of The Haven, what started out as a community wellbeing space for the people of Stonehaven in the northeast of Scotland, is now so much more. It will be essential listening for anyone and everyone who's concerned with the wellbeing of people, and will be of particular interest to individuals and groups who are looking to start similar initiatives across the UK, or indeed the interview, I think will strike a chord with groups already established. Interestingly though, I thought such a movement in the community, which included a highly successful community larder, would be welcomed by all. Not necessarily so. Find out more in the next episode of My Life with Amazing Strangers. Until next time, please feel free to liberally share what you've heard and learned today. And I am so grateful for your company. Thank you once again for listening.